Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We're your hosts for this weekend's edition. Also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com and podcast, Corlin Economics Report. Thank you everybody for sending in the emails, letting us know which podcast distributors you use and which ones you have been having trouble getting our podcast. We went through a bit of a change in servers and distribution network, and we're still trying to make sure that our podcast is being uploaded every day to all the different podcasting apps. So please keep emailing us, letting us know, hopefully, that you are receiving it, or if you're not, let us know what service you are using. That being said, let's get into these markets as we are kicking off the show with Richard Postma, a.k.a. Doc. Now, Doc, we always chat either at the very tail end or very beginning of the month. We are recording this on Wednesday, and really it's about recapping last month and looking ahead to how you see these markets playing out. We will get into the precious metals and a few other sectors, but first and foremost, U.S. equity markets. July was a pretty good month for U.S. markets. They started to bounce really at the beginning or second week of the month. And no matter what market you look at, whether it's the S&P, Dow, NASDAQ, Russell, they're all up 12 to 15, 16%. So it has been a nice rebound. But again, this rebound does very much look like nothing more than a bear market rally or dead cat bounce. Doc, what's your takeaway from that July action and how it translates into what could come here in August?
Well, I think August is going to be a month where it's going to be okay for the conventional markets. And I think that we could move higher, but I don't see a lot of volatility in the conventional markets this month. I think the market this month could close out at a higher level than July. And we could have a few weeks here of getting people's hopes up. The negative on that is, frankly, is I'm sure it's one of the variables that the Fed watches is the conventional markets, and they must be licking their chops because that's going to allow them to continue to be aggressive in their interest rate hikes. And that's the worst thing possible, frankly, for us to see as far as the precious metals and commodities are concerned. So they're going to love the fact that the conventional markets are so sanguine, and it's just going to allow them to be even more aggressive going forward as long as these conventional markets levitate here. But I don't think that's going to last. And come September and October, I think the conventional markets get some real headwinds again.
Yeah, Doc, it's a great point that the stronger markets over the last couple of weeks, and if that extends into August, will give the Fed some cover to continue hiking as planned and as they've messaged. But if you think that things could roll over in September, October, I just got to ask, I know you put on some shorts in the past on the general markets. Would there be a technical level or a place you'd be looking to short the general equities again, say in a month or so?
Boy, that's a real tough one, Chad, because I would probably look at about 34,000 as the first chance to short. That's the first chance I would look at shorting this market. And it's going to take us a little while to get there, but I think we might reach that again as 34,000. Then I'd have to seriously look at other technical indicators to see if I want to take a position again. So that's what I'm watching right now is around 34,000. I think we have some really good odds to get up to that over the next few weeks.
So, Doc, what I find so interesting about a lot of these U.S. equity market charts is that the bottom, or at least the short-term bottom, was really put in the middle of June. So the market's looking ahead to, who knows, maybe a slowdown in Fed policy, or quite frankly, they're just oversold to the fact that they rebounded. But over this month and a half now, you look at something like the NASDAQ on a daily chart, the NASDAQ is pretty much back to overbought territory. If you look at the RSI, if you look at the slow stochastics, does that change your outlook at all, saying that maybe the worst is over in this large, or what has been kind of a grinding bear market through this whole year?
boy, I hope the worst isn't over, because that's not going to portend well for our future. Because when you look at the long-term charts, the markets have not broken down through their 50-month moving averages for years, except in 2020, when it closed briefly below it, when we had that plunge in the early part of 2020, which, when it happens that fast, it's often not a signal of a bear market. So if we're truly in a bear market, we're going to have to take those 50-month simple moving averages and exponential moving averages out to really see a bear market for this. Because if it bounces off of there like we did in June and we continue to move higher, this market is going to be so overbought that when the crash comes later, it's going to be stupendous, actually. So we've had just unrequiting moves higher in these markets because of the easy money policies. And we can't afford that anymore, because it's just going to put us at more risk down the road.
It's a great point, Doc. And I don't think a lot of people that are at trading desks that have only been trading maybe 10 or 15 years even understand what a real bear market looks like. But it's not over in 6 months typically, or 8 months. It's usually 12 to 18 months. And all the economic indicators are that the economy is slowing, whether it's the housing, the labor markets, the GDP numbers. It's not a real rosy picture out there, and that will be reflected in corporate earnings reports. When you're looking at the general markets, Doc, do you ever get into individual names, or do you mostly trade ETFs? What are you looking at when you invest in the general markets?
I look at different sectors, and especially growth stories. Right now, I'm looking at a couple of biotech companies that I've started to purchase at really low levels that were up tremendously compared to where they are. And they've got good products. And I think with time, if they continue to grow those companies, and I think they have a chance of really seeing a big move down the road. And biotech has gotten hurt so bad. So I'm looking at that. And then I'm looking at a semiconductor company that may have a product that replaces silicon as far as batteries are concerned, because it's much more efficient, it's not as heavy. And so I'm looking at things like that with that are a small cap that have a potential to really do well in the future. So I'm starting to purchase some in that area. So I'll look at any sector where there's a potential high growth story, and I'll start to take positions, because some of those stocks have gotten so battered already.
All right, Doc, let's move over to the precious metals. I know a lot of our listeners want to hear your thoughts on the precious metals. Let's start with gold. Gold got off to a pretty bad start to the month in July, selling off pretty consistently down to a low of about $1,678. That was about 3 weeks through. And then it rebounded nicely in the last couple of weeks to close just under $1,800. Again, though, the chart still isn't looking all that great when you consider it's just continuously lower lows and lower highs that we keep on seeing here. Are you encouraged at all by that rebound in July from that 1678 level?
Yeah, somewhat. What I'm encouraged by is the fact that, you know, you go back to 2012 to 2013 in that gold market in 2011, when we saw a move down in that peak, we moved down, and I have to check my numbers, but if I remember correctly, we moved down about 46% before we bottomed from the top. And here we are sitting more months out than when it did that almost back then. And we're about 20% down or less. And I've talked consistently about how this, there is more underlying strength to this gold market than back then. And that's very encouraging. Now, the other thing I have been harping on for months is that when everybody was so bullish and it went up and challenged its highs before, I've been harping that it is so rare. And why I harp on these things is for people to give an indication on what might happen here, the odds of it. It's so rare to be in a long-term downtrend like this without pricing challenging the lower Bollinger band on the monthly chart. And guess what? We challenged that finally last month. And it's encouraging that we bounced off of that. Plus, we bounced off of one of the 50-month moving averages, which I had mentioned also it would be rare that we then challenge those. So now we're up here this month, and that's encouraging. And I think this month for gold is going to be okay. We might even close with a higher monthly close than last month. But once again, I don't think we're going to get a chance of moving right back down to challenge that lower Bollinger band this month. We may do it in September, but so far we're looking pretty good this month. And those bands, Bollinger bands, are still moving sideways. The lower one's starting to move down a little bit, which I don't like to see. But compared to what happened in 2011, 12, and 13, this is a totally different picture than we saw back then. Plus, I had mentioned that the strength indicators were moving laterally to down at such a slow rate, and that usually gives you an indication that you have underlying strength to a market.
Doc, some really cogent points there. I distinctly remember 2010, 2011, there was true euphoria in the sector. There was people out on streets with signs saying they'd buy gold. There were TV commercials. There were radio commercials everywhere. We were nothing like that when gold got above its all-time high just in 2020. And this year in March, when gold got back above 2000, there was no euphoria in the sector. It was mostly just precious metals traders trading amongst themselves. So 100%, it's a different setup than the downturn we saw in 2013, which was that really cascade down. We haven't seen that this time. So to your point, there's some underlying strength in the gold market, but it sounds like you think things are going to waffle along here, maybe a little bit up in August, a little bit down in September, October. What will you be looking for as a signal that it's more of an all clear, that maybe the uptrend is really going to start in earnest with gold?
I will get feeling a lot better when you look at the MACD on the monthly chart, and I said this months ago, when we get close to neutral on that, because I don't think the MACD is going to go as deep into negative territory like we did back in 2011, 12, and 13. And that's what I'm watching very closely. And we're going to continue to move down with the 12-month leading the 26-month. We've reestablished that move down, and that could last into the first part of next year, frankly. And so that's what I'm watching very carefully. And there's a couple other things that I'm interested in that I may mention later, because I may then, if those particular technicals are reached, I may raise the alert to people that I feel that we're pretty close to a bottom.
Doc, let's talk gold stocks then. GDX, GDXJ, no denying that they have been in a downtrend really since August of 2020. So we're talking 2 years now. The stocks went through a pretty big sell-off in June, rebounded a little bit in July, but are still well below any recent highs. And look, it's a pretty pronounced downtrend that we are seeing here. GDXJ, for example, is off a little over 50% from those highs in August. Any chance that these gold stocks finally do get some more notice from investors rather than simply just trading with markets? Because I thought scary markets, bear markets, recession fears, all that should be pushing investors into gold stocks. Doesn't seem to be, because they moved exactly with the markets during this rebound.
Yeah, and I had mentioned that a long time too, that I thought it would, once the general market got hurt bad, would kind of move down with the market. Because I think what these stocks are signaling and what gold is signaling is that we're moving into a disinflationary environment. Now, that doesn't mean deflation. That means disinflationary. And I think we're going to start to see some slowdown in inflation as far as the percentage gained in comparison over last year. One of the reasons why, frankly, I think the oil chart is starting to break, which I had mentioned a while back. And it won't break enough to help Biden in November by that time, I don't think. But it's in a slow motion and in a southern manner right now. And so I think there will be some positive news on inflation in another 2 or 3 months. I think we're going to see some slowing of it. And gold may be sensing that right now. Now, that doesn't mean that the Fed's going to be out of the woods at all, because they think, everybody thought they meant that we were at neutral at 2.5, which we aren't, by the way. Suddenly, all the other ones came out afterwards when a couple of days later we had mentioned this, that suddenly Kashkari got all hawkish after he'd been dovish. And that's what they do. They play these word games back and forth just to keep people unsettled that are trading these markets. They've been doing that for years. But anyway, so I think we will continue to see pressure, particularly on GDX, because all you have to do is look at Newmont right now, and that's a pretty ugly looking chart, and it's right at its 400 week exponential moving average, and it's going to probably close below that this week, and that does not portend well for Newmont. So the big caps are starting to get hit here finally, and that's going to continue in the near weeks going forward.
Well, Doc, we talked about the big caps possibly being more at risk because they hadn't pulled back as much as the juniors. But before we started recording, we were just talking about just how beat down these juniors are in valuation. Some are trading at cash in the bank. Some have got millions of ounces of gold in the ground, or hundreds of millions of ounces of silver in the ground, and they're trading like they've got nothing in the ground. Do you think that there's actually more advantage now to some of the junior stocks over the more established producers just based on where the valuations are?
Oh, yes, no questions added. And the nice thing about that is, for those of us that have waited, you can start to purchase these companies at pennies. And even though Newmont, and I mentioned that, let's say moves down another $5, some of these might move down 2 cents. So it's not going to hurt you anymore, unless some of them would go bankrupt. But the ones with, gold in the ground, I don't think that would happen, because somebody will come in, and actually you'll see mergers and acquisitions going forward for companies that at least have some money to do that. But yeah, they're getting so cheap that they're not going to get hurt as much as some of the big caps on a percentage basis here anymore. So good to do your due diligence and start purchasing some of these.
It doesn't sound like an all clear though, is it, Doc? Like, this isn't something that you're expecting is going to pay off in the near term. This, unfortunately, and as much as I hate saying it, is still a longer term play.
Absolutely. And I've also said constantly over the last number of weeks and months that when we get to a bottom here, you're going to have to see some consolidation for a while. And then what you're going to, and the chance of a big V-shaped recovery is I don't think going to be there like it was back in 2020. I think what you're going to see is a slow build over time on these stocks. And then eventually we're going to get the run we want.
Well, Doc, some of the, like you, that follows technicians as closely as you do, and I would probably categorize you as more of a value investor trying to buy low and hold for long periods of time. Isn't it important for people to also, when they're listening to these kind of shows, think about their investing time horizon? Because there's been plenty of opportunities where a nimble trader could get in and make 30%, 50%, 100%, even multiple percentages, even over the last 2 years since August of 2020, when we've been correcting. There's been plenty of tradable rallies. But so some people get excited about the short-term tradable rallies, but most people claim they're buying for the long term, and then they worry about every little blip along the way instead of keeping their eye on the longer-term prize. How do you manage that cognitive dissonance as a value investor?
With difficulty. these things get so cheap that I say to myself, holy cow, can they get any cheaper? And a lot of them do. And you've just got to stay objective with your charting. And you're right about some of these swings. I've even done some of it, Shad, where I made money on, where I'll buy a position knowing that we're pretty close to the end of a move down, and then get a move up of 40% on some of these cheap stocks. But it takes a real discipline and a belief in what you're seeing, and to stay true to the charts. And I'm old enough to have been through this a few times. So it's easier probably for me than some of the younger guys that, you know, just are chomping at the bit. But that's when you get whipsawed. That's when, and I am a value investor mostly. I buy for the long term, and I like to buy companies really cheap because, you know, the returns are amazing if you hang on.
So, Doc, let's also talk silver then, because I want to get your thoughts on silver. Drop below $20 an ounce, down into the 18 region, then quickly recovered back up to just over $20 an ounce. As we're recording this, it has just slipped slightly below $20 an ounce, but let's just round it off to say silver's at $20 an ounce. Any encouragement on silver leading the way higher or getting back up into the mid-20s?
Not for a while. I think silver's on its way to move back down to $19, and let's see what happens then. But no, but still, for those that believe in the cup and handle, it's still there. In fact, this is a nicer farming handle that we're now seeing than we were seeing before. So that's still in play, by the way. I wouldn't throw that out just yet, because we could still move lower this year and then into early part of next year, bottom, and then start moving up with silver. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened at all.
Well, Doc, that'll be important to follow along with, because really a lot of the mining stocks seem to track the movements of silver, that speculative money, more so than they do gold anyways. But what about the rest of the base metals? Because silver kind of has that unique dual purpose. It's part precious metal, part industrial metal. But what about things like Dr. Copper? What about nickel and zinc? Yeah, how are you viewing the rest of the metals in the commodity space when we have inflation, but we have a recession worry, we've got Fed rate hikes? It's a real garbled mix. What's your outlook?
Yeah, you know, in copper, with us moving into recession, copper is at great risk. And copper right now on the weekly is playing with a 200-week moving average. And it took it out for 1 week. And if we move back down below that and to a new low, copper's going even lower. We could head down to 250. So I'd be careful with copper right here. With a recession looming for the next few weeks to months, I don't know how copper can continue to survive at these levels. So I'd be very careful with copper right here and with the monthly chart I'm looking at. I don't see any rebound significantly in copper for a while.
Doc, quick comment on the U.S. dollar. How much has the U.S. dollar contributed to this downturn in the metals? Where do you see the dollar going from here? And again, any carryover effect to the markets or metals?
The dollar has really hurt the commodity sector, the precious metals and the commodity sector. And with the interest rate hikes coming, and the fact that the euro dollar, even though they're starting to increase rates there a little bit, I don't think it's going to hurt the dollar, because Europe just stinks as far as its problems. Europe has, and Germany particularly, have just horrendous problems with the U.S. sanctions imposed on Russia as far as natural gas and oil, and Germany particularly. And so they're going to be in more dire economic straits than we are. So I think that's going to be still positive for the dollar for a while. I don't see the dollar in trouble until the fourth quarter of this year. I think that's when the dollar most likely will peak. I think it continues to move grudgingly higher, and then I think we get to the point where it starts to peak the fourth quarter of this year.
Well, Doc, just in light of that and what some of the other economies are facing, or what the other central banks are doing, where they're starting to tighten, we're seeing the ECB tighten, we're seeing Canada tighten, we're seeing Bank of London tighten for the UK. Is there any chance that some of these other currencies gain a little bit on the dollar, or does that change your outlook on bonds and interest rates? Any thoughts on how that all kind of ties together, what we're seeing globally versus the U.S.?
I don't see where a lot of other currencies do that great against the dollar, because really everybody is sucking wind here, and Japan isn't much better off. And as we know, the euro on a trade-weighted basis makes up about 58% of the dollar index. So I don't see how that will play much of a role at all. And when you look at the bond market, the bond market, I don't think is going to recover anytime soon. I think we're going to get a little move up here yet, and we are. So there's going to be a little reprieve here for the bond market for a little while, but I don't see the bond market really moving significantly higher here. I think rates will continue to slowly increase here, and we've taken out the 50-month moving averages on the bond market, which was significant. We hadn't done that in years, And so we're definitely establishing a new trend in the bond market, I believe. And we're not going to see those kind of highs again probably in our lifetime.
All right, Doc, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for taking our questions on a number of different markets. And hey, we might be in for an okay month, but it does sound like still your outlook is for this bear market to continue, and this bear market that has just taken the stairs down pretty consistently with the odd little bounce here and there. It seems like we're going through another bounce right now. But again, everything just seems to be moving in tandem with each other. Maybe this risk-on environment, it's encouraging to see, but we're all still just waiting for another Fed meeting, which now is still 7 weeks away. Doc, thank you as always for your time. It's great chatting with you. Great having you on the show. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend. We'll chat again at the tail end of the month.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.